This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. Special edition, Bob Zimmerman keeps the website Behind the Black. And we can't wait for reports on some of these rocket engineering stories and discovery stories. Primarily, ever since I saw the news flash that NASA had lost contact with Orion, the lunar orbiter that doesn't have people in it now but is meant to in future. Lost contact for 47 minutes, I thought, whoa. And I wait for Bob to help me understand. Bob, the history of this is all I have. I don't have your engineering. I haven't written books about it. However, I recall the Christmas season of 1968 and the launch of Apollo 8. You've written a whole book about it. I recall it because we watched it on black and white television. This was a very big deal after a very bad year, 1968. And it was going to get worse in 69. And when the astronauts went around the moon and then emerged from the other side, reading from the book of Genesis, it was a healing event for the moment. However, I think to myself, if NASA control had lost contact with Apollo 8 for an hour, Bob, the whole world would have freaked out. But here, they lost contact with Orion for 47 minutes, and on the freak calendar from 1 to 10, I don't even see a 1 here, Bob.
Yeah. NASA, I am very afraid for the astronauts that they want to put on the SLS rocket and in the Orion capsule for the next SLS launch. To land, not only go around the moon, but to land them on the moon. I am very much afraid for those guys because they are not doing the due diligence that they did in the Apollo era. And then they don't seem to be taking problems with the same kind of concern. And that's the kind of culture that leads to a Challenger or a Columbia accident. So I'm very much afraid. Yes, so what happens is Orion is a capsule, manned capsule, not going on its first flight, and it's going on to the moon where it's going to be in a very wide orbit for the moon for about a week, and then it will come back to Earth, and in the return to Earth, they will be testing its heat shield coming back into Earth's atmosphere. NASA wants to use Orion as the transportation vehicle for the humans to and from the Earth. As an ascent capsule, travel to the lunar gateway, then be picked up by Starship to land, then return to Orion to return to Earth in Orion. And that's how they want to do it. So they're testing it in this wide orbit that's kind of comparable to what Lunar Gateway will be in. And they lost contact for 47 minutes, and they eventually said it's been resolved. That's all they basically told us. They said that they resolved the issue with a reconfiguration on the ground side. This has to do with the ground systems, the deep space network antennas that they use to communicate with this. But that's all they said. And so it's a little concerning when I just get worried. Meanwhile, though, Orion is on its way to its most distant point in its orbit around the moon. When it reaches that point, the European-built surface module will fire its engines, and that will put it into this wide retrograde lunar orbit. Retrograde meaning it orbits counterclockwise, while most everything in the solar system orbits clockwise. And it'll orbit the moon in this very, very wide orbit for about a week, and then they will maneuver it to come back to Earth. And everything seems to be working well in general, and, you know, they're testing various things. They're testing the reaction control system. This is how they orient the spacecraft. They're testing various communications procedures, the main engines in the service module. Everything's being tested, and they're testing the atmosphere and the spacecraft itself, though it's not entirely environmentally man-rated right now. They've left some pieces out. But nonetheless, it seems to be going all right, but once again, they lost communication for 47
detailed
minutes,
Bob.
And one wonders why.
Yeah, detailed, Bob, on your site, you link to a report that the mobile launcher was damaged by the SLS takeoff. Is this unusual?
It would be considered unacceptable to SpaceX for having a launch damage its launch platform. They would want to build it so that you can launch quickly and not have to make major repairs. NASA's rocket is very, very powerful. So yes, it does do some damage to the mobile launcher, and NASA showed pictures of this damage, and Caudill in glee. Look how powerful our rocket is. It damages our mobile launcher. Since they don't launch this rocket more than once every two years at the fastest, they got plenty of time to fix the damage. And of course, they've got an agency. They don't care about cost. It's just the taxpayers' money. It's not theirs. If it was a private company, they would find out ways to prevent such damage from occurring so that the mobile launcher would not be damaged after each launch. But in this case, yes, this brings us once back to the same thing that makes me worried about the astronauts that are going to go to the moon on SLS Orion come in the future.
We go to the nation of Hungary, member of EU, member of NATO, a dissenting member of NATO once in a while, but right now it's looking to become a space country. What have they done, Bob?
It's an interesting thing that they have not signed a contract with NASA to fly astronauts in space. Heck no, we don't want to go on your rockets. They've instead signed a deal with Axiom, the private commercial space station company that has been flying, that has already flown astronauts to ISS using a Dragon and capsule on SpaceX. And Axiom's got a bunch of other launches planned. And one of their customers is Hungary, and Hungary has committed $100 million in its budget to fly a Hungarian astronaut on a 30-day mission to ISS, and this is through Axiom. And Axiom will use a Dragon capsule and a Falcon 9 rocket for this mission. They have customers from Turkey and Saudi Arabia as well. And those missions, and the Hungarian mission, by the way, is set for sometime in 2024-25. The 30-day length suggests to me that they're planning this mission to take place after Axiom has attached its own module to the space station. Once Axiom has its own module at ISS, maybe its own port, they won't be limited by NASA rules on how long they can stay. And that might explain the 30-day mission. And, you know, NASA puts a lot of restrictions on what Axiom can do on the station when it goes to the NASA-controlled station. But if it's on its own module, that's why they'll be able to do a longer mission, I think. I hope they get that module up soon, because that'll start to pull the commercial space away from the government and make it independent. Right now, the biggest obstacle to doing lots of flights to space station is the number of ports on ISS and the limitations thereof because of government missions. And so Axiom getting its own module will only increase the freedom of private enterprise.
And private enterprise, the first commercial passenger spacewalk. But the puzzle is, it's going to be Dragon. And as I recall, Bob, we speculated that Dragon doesn't have an airlock. So how are they going to do this?
Yes, we talked about this earlier. This is the Polaris Dawn commercial flight. This is the second flight that Jared Isaacman has paid for. He flew with three others on an orbital Dragon mission back in November. Once again, he had nothing to do with ISS, so the government had nothing to do with that private mission. And they're going to do it again. He's got actually a contract with SpaceX to do it three more times, and the third one with Starship. But on this preliminary mission, he's going to fly with three other crew members, one of whom flew with him on the previous mission. And this flight is supposed to, last about a week. And during the flight, they're going to do a spacewalk, the first non-government astronauts or people in space to do a spacewalk. And we had not realized, we were wondering, are they going to add an airlock to Dragon? And it turns out they're not going to add an airlock. What they're going to do instead is they will open the hatch, and everybody basically is on a spacewalk. As Isaacman said, we've collectively taken the position that we're all going on an EVA. Whether you're sticking your head outside, you are doing an EVA. We are contemplating two people on the outside of the vehicle, and two would be inside making sure that everything is going correct. But the air would be evacuated from the entire spaceship. This is comparable to the Gemini first spacewalk of Ed White, where they just opened the hatch, both guys were in spacesuits, and only one went outside. They're aiming for a March 23 launch for this. That flight will also take them to the highest orbit, Earth orbit, a manned space vehicle has ever taken. And I think that and the spacewalk are both preliminary tests of the kind of engineering that a private mission needs. if they're going to go to Hubble and do repairs on Hubble. They're going to have to go higher, and they're going to have to do spacewalks to do stuff. And so I think Isaac Mintz, who is in communication with NASA, studying the possibility of a private mission to Hubble to do repair work, he's beginning to do the work in space to prepare for that.
The European Space Agency is now going to follow NASA's lead of some years past and invest or commit or embrace private space companies. Bob, this is really good news.
Yes, and it's an interesting thing. I actually had two stories on Behind the Black, and let me do the other one first because I think it was a political maneuver by France, Germany, and Italy to force the ministers, the 23 ministers of all the partners of the European Space Agency to make this decision. France, Germany, and Italy earlier this last week signed an agreement saying they wanted to change the European Space Agency's policies that said all launches, commercial or government, would be handled by Arianna Space, the commercial arm of the European Space Agency. Basically, it's a monopoly. It's a cartel. It basically prevents your independent companies from Europe from functioning. And both France, Germany, and Italy signed an agreement saying, no, we want to change that. We want to allow free independent companies to compete for our business. We want to make the ESA a customer rather than a builder of rockets. And Germany especially wanted this because they've got three different private companies competing to become launcher companies. And so they want to be able to compete. And so ESA had a ministerial meeting. This is all the government officials from all 23 partners. They got together. And after that agreement was announced by France, Germany, and Italy, the ESA announced they're going to commit $122 million to a program to encourage private, independent, and competing space companies to get business. In other words, and that's a 17% increase in the budget for this particular program. It had existed before, but they've upped its budget. And the idea of this program is very similar to what NASA was doing in the early days of commercial space. They would do they would hire private companies to do stuff, provide some money as part of the contract. But the idea was the companies would own what they built and be independent of NASA. And so this program will do the same kind of thing. It's interesting. The funding is very small here. It's very clear that the governments and the European Space Agency are being dragged to do this, kicking and screaming. Most of them, they don't want to. They want to leave control. They want to maintain their own control. This is very similar to Congress not wanting to do this back in a decade ago. And the Congress's reluctance meant the budgets were small, and it delayed Starliner and Dragon because of it. And I think ESA is doing the kind of same thing. The end result, though, is that commercial space will easily top anything Arianna Space can do. And so just give it time. We're going to see some exciting things coming out of Europe.
Detail, Bob. We have learned over decades that governments cannot pick winners. So I regard the small amount that NASA started with and the small amount ESA starts with as encouraging genuine entrepreneurs and not cronyism. That's why I think that the small number is better than the large number. You remember what happened when the Obama administration committed to green and all the clever fellows came in and then were bankrupt within a year?
Yeah. I actually 100% agree with you. In my policy paper, Capitalism in Space, I expressly point this out, that it's a good thing that they don't give them a lot of money. That these companies should only get some support, but they should invest their own money in what they build because they're going to own it. And so this is not a bad thing. It means they have to get investment capital. They've got to own what they do. The government, it's not just a trough they're feeding off of. And so it's a good thing that they are limiting the funds. But the reason they're limiting the funds is not for the good reason you and I just expressed, John. The reason is because they really don't want to do it. And I want to make that clear.
All right. iSpace has a better idea, which is a private commercial lander on the moon, but it's delayed again. Do we know why, Bob?
Yeah, iSpace's Hikaru Luna Lander was supposed to launch on a SpaceX Falcon 9 this weekend. They've delayed it 2 days to November 30th, and the delay is due to weather and scheduling issues. And the weather is not weather when they launched. The weather was weather before Thanksgiving. NASA was going to launch a Dragon cargo freighter to ISS before Thanksgiving. The weather had forced them to scrub the launch, and because of the holidays, they had to reschedule it to November 26th after Thanksgiving. And that meant that that SpaceX had to push back the Hakuto R lunar lander launch in order to facilitate scheduling. That lander is carrying lots of private and government payloads, including the United Arab Emirates Rashid rover. And it will be a pretty exciting mission when it goes, because even though it'll get there in April, it'll be launched now, but it'll get there in April. But it'll be exciting because this is all private. A private company is doing the lander, a private company is doing the launch. And the payloads might be government, but they have purchased the space on the lander. And iSpace has many other missions planned because they got customers, and that's a good thing.
And Astra. Bob, right now, I would say that Astra is building a better machine, a better booster. But Rocket Lab turns out, is this the new SpaceX? Is this the kid on the block that showed up, Rocket Lab?
Well, Rocket Lab's been around, you know, since 2017, launching rockets. It's been very successful. It's getting about a launch a month this year. It's about to make its first launch out of Wallops Island in the U.S., which would give it then three launch sites, two in New Zealand and one in the United States, so its launch pace will increase. Astra was one of the new rocket startups. It got its first launch basically this year. It's done about two or three launches, but it's had a number of failures. The rocket it had was a very small rocket. It had a contract with NASA to launch a constellation called TROPICS for NASA. One of those failed launches lost two of the TROPICS satellites. And Astra made a decision sometime this year that they're abandoning that small rocket and they're going to develop a bigger rocket. But that meant that basically that put them out as they're no longer an operational rocket company. And NASA wanted to get their TROPICS constellation launched. So what NASA has done is it's switched over to Rocket Lab. Rocket Lab's won the contract to launch the TROPICS satellites. Astra still has a contract, in quotes, with NASA, but it will depend on when their new rocket shows up, if and when. And so Rocket Lab just keeps getting more business, John, because they're successful and they're making operational launches and they've developed a good rocket system.
What I like about SpaceX is that Musk says he wants to die on Mars, but that sometimes worries me, Bob. So Rocket Lab doesn't want to die on Mars. They just want to make money, and that's a good thing.
I must point out that Peter Beck, the CEO of Rocket Lab, is as much a space cadet as Elon Musk, and they're both realists. Yes, Elon Musk wants to die on Mars, but you'll notice, unlike Jeff Bezos or Richard Branson, Elon Musk has not flown on any of his own rockets yet, because that isn't really what his focus is. His focus is making sure he makes money and his rockets work, just like Peter Beck. And so neither of these guys is going to fly in space until they think the system is set to go and ready for them to fly on, and not beforehand.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black, Space Engineering Behind Us. We're going space exploring. This is the Friends of History Debating Society, special edition with Bob Zimmerman. I'm John Batchelor.